This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Last week, the Federal Communications Commission voted to approve classifying broadband internet service as a utility. That decision, known as net neutrality, is seen as a win for the digital industry and a defeat for large broadband providers like Comcast. We're going to try to figure out what that means for the industry with Rick Gershon. He's professor of communication and co-director of the Telecommunications and Information Management Program at Western Michigan University. Rick Gershon, thank you for being here.
Good to be with you, Gordon.
Let's begin with the basic definition here. What is net neutrality?
Well, the term net neutrality refers to the basic freedom that all users of the internet enjoy in terms of accessing and providing content. Net neutrality presupposes a neutral and steady playing field with easy on-ramps. And in principle, it prevents cable operators, telephone carriers, and other internet service providers from blocking content or deliberately slowing down any part of the network for business reasons. In sum, all internet traffic should be treated equally, regardless of that information's point of origin or destination.
Is that the rules that we have been operating under for as long as any of us have been using the internet?
I think so. I think that basically, you know, like many new technologies, the internet kind of evolved of its own. But I think there was just kind of a general recognition that this was sort of the fair way to play and that basically everybody should have access to it in whatever way is possible. But as more and more enhanced services have come into play, you know, the rules of engagement have gotten a lot more complicated. And so when you're talking about various kinds of wireless devices, when you're talking about video streaming over the internet, when you're talking about television programming and over-the-top services, now suddenly it's no longer the internet from 10 years ago.
And is video streaming perhaps the real crux of this debate, that it has become much more common to stream video? That's what takes the most broadband, the most bandwidth to actually accomplish. And is that really where this debate is centered around?
I think it's a combination of things. I think it's the video streaming is certainly a big piece of it, because the likes of a YouTube or Hulu or Netflix has definitely increased the amount of data traffic that follows, you know, an internet service provider. And there's no question that in the evening, you know, Netflix represents, you know, 60% of what people are using the internet for, you know, on a given evening. And then you also have the issue of mobile wireless, because when you're talking about the likes of an iPad or your cell phones, again, all of this is internet stuff that's basically being used for the transport of data, voice communication, and what have you. So I think, you know, as internet service providers look at the issue of how do they want to go about conducting their business and maintaining services, I think it's become a much more robust, you know, conversation about how to proceed in the future.
If an internet service provider looks at Netflix and they say, okay, you're taking up a lot of our bandwidth because you're streaming video and other services are not. With net neutrality, right now, is there any room for negotiation between those two entities, or does the internet service provider just have to accept the fact that Netflix is going to use more of that bandwidth because they are streaming video and original programming, those sort of things?
Well, that's really the whole point about reclassifying the idea of broadband under Title II. When the FCC made their decision last week to reclassify it, they're really, in effect, treating internet service provision as a common carrier service. And what that really means in practical terms is that they're more like the telephone company of old. And so the idea, of course, is that when you are now operating as a common carrier, you can't discriminate against your users. You have to basically just patch through the service exactly as it's being presented to you. So the cable operator or the telephone carrier who's basically delivering this service doesn't have the wherewithal to sort of make decisions about content delivery or speed or anything. Their job is just simply to, you know, deliver the service as it's being given to them. Now, they can make an argument and say, you know, we're going to charge you more because you are requiring more physically more of our services in terms of delivery, a little bit like business services were in the days, you know, in the old days of telephone, where you're talking about business versus residential service. You can probably do that. But in this case, you're really saying you can't discriminate against the people who are delivering the service or the end user. And that's also part of the reason why I think business is a little bit, you know, the Verizons of the world and the AT&Ts are very concerned about that, because they lose a lot of control over, you know, how they can charge for this and how they are to deliver these services. I'll give you an example. historically, you know, your classic example of a common carrier is the post office. So you pay for postage, and in theory, the post office is obligated to then send your letter wherever you're sending it to. So long as you pay for the postage, the post office can't get involved with the actual physical content, and their job is simply to deliver. Well, that's really what you're looking at in this scenario. But the whole point is telephone-like internet. And, you know, in a very, very famous case called NCTA versus Brand X Services, you know, back in 2005, you know, the courts were asked to consider that, and they basically regulated, or they basically made a decision about broadband as being an enhanced information services. And so now what we've done is we've gone back and re-regulated, or we're really in thinking about re-regulating internet as though it were a telephone service under this common carrier regulation. And I think that has a lot of people thinking that it's a step backwards. And to a certain extent, there's some truth in that, in the fact that, you know, part of the challenge with regulating high-speed internet services, like any enhanced information services, is that the regulation can't keep pace with the technology. You know, a good example of that is where you're dealing with digital rights management. The laws on the books are so antiquated in comparison to where we really stand with digital rights issues, you know, in terms of, you know, online music and stuff like that. The telephone industry, the Verizons, the AT&Ts of the world would say, you know what, this kind of regulation is a little bit a step backwards. And it's interesting because one of the reactions of Verizon when the FCC voted in that 3-2 decision to promote net neutrality was to respond by sending, I think it was that they sent a note to the FCC on a typewriter. They typed out their answer and then sent it in Morse code as well, their way of letting everybody know that they didn't think that this was a step to the future, but a step backwards.
Stepping back here for a moment and looking at the history of regulation, has the internet as we've come to know and use it as consumers really been the Wild West? I mean, has it been lightly regulated, unregulated? I mean, how would you classify to someone who examines this regularly?
I think that for a long time, it's really been the Wild, Wild West. We've just kind of let it sort of develop of its own accord. You know, and it's gone through various stages of evolution from the days when it was first sort of, you know, created as part of the Department of Defense, you know, going back to the 1960s and 70s. But I think the thing is that, you know, today, of course, it's a very robust network. We certainly, you know, try to keep a very light touch to regulation, and rightfully so. I think there's some truth and value in that. But I think the rules of the game are changing, and I think as more and more complex services come into play, you know, wireless communication, and as we said, video streaming and mobile wireless, you can't just sort of let things just continue as they are, because sooner or later they are going to come to a head. At some point, you do have to take a little bit of a preventative approach so that at some point, when you get into some serious congestion issues. As an example, when you think about wireless communication and the use of downloading Facebook onto your phone, or you're basically downloading Netflix, you know, onto your iPad, that takes up an enormous amount of electromagnetic spectrum, of which we don't have a lot of. And so the idea that you're just going to kind of keep going along as we have in the past is just not sustainable. So I think that there's a real need, a real value in taking a hard look at this question. But the reality is that people do deserve a very, very unfettered, robust, neutral playing field. There shouldn't be a sense of the ISP trying to make judgment calls as terms of, you know, preferred lanes, speed lanes versus what everybody else gets, because I think there's a potential danger in that. And I think the argument has been made sometimes that the people who are the real entrepreneurs would not be the entrepreneurs that they are today if they suddenly were dealing with a two-tier system. There's those for the fast lanes, for those who can afford it versus those who cannot. So I think we're at best much better for having a more neutral playing field. On the other hand, I think there needs to be a greater public recognition that this isn't free. I mean, you have to have these companies that do provide the services need to have the wherewithal to create services that make sense.
A piece in Wired magazine by a guy named Jeffrey Main, who was very critical of the FCC's decision. But let me just read you this part of it here, where he says, competition on the internet is constantly evolving and poorly understood. AOL was a has-been before the ink was dry on the relentless complaints about its unassailable monopoly. Cable content is suddenly challenged by streaming. DSL was once thought dead, but now offering high-speed service. And I guess I'm wondering here, does he have a point that regulations are always going to be sort of shooting at a very quickly moving target, that this is going to be changing as we go, and therefore that regulations as they exist may become quickly outdated?
Well, I think there's a certain element of truth to his argument. I mean, sometimes we try to regulate things before we really understand the problem. And I think the examples that he cites are very reasonable, because sometimes we assume that these great monopolies are going to be monopolies forever. You know, there was a time when Microsoft was the evil empire, but they're no longer any bigger or worse than any number of other companies. And the same is true for a lot of other companies. Now, suddenly Google has become sort of in the crosshairs of a lot of people, but this too shall pass. And so I think there's a sense that when you try to regulate companies kind of in mid-process, that you sometimes run the risk of overshooting the mark. And as I said, you know, and the argument I would use is a little bit, as I said earlier, about digital rights management. We want to regulate digital media, but the thing is, the truth is that it's moving much faster than regulation can kind of keep pace. So I think, you know, his point is that I think we need to keep a light touch with this sort of thing so that we don't overextend ourselves, overshoot the mark before we really understand how this thing is going to really unfold.
This is probably very unfair, but if you had to take a guess as we sit here right now and say 5 years into the future, what sort of things will we be debating in terms of government regulations and the legal framework around digital communications? What would be your best guess right now?
I think that this issue of net neutrality is, you know, we haven't seen the end of it. I think we're going to see a version of it for sure. I think there'll be a little bit more opportunity given back to the internet service providers in terms of how they regulate, you know, internet speed and delivery. The thing we forget, for example, is that, you know, you have as a consumer the right to pay different delivery speeds. So already you're already exercising that right. We know that in the interstate highway system, we have a situation where people do pay different, you know, freight fees and different rates for whether they're a large truck vehicle versus residential car. We see it also in terms of electricity. We see it in terms of the telephone industry between business users versus residential users. So this idea is not without some precedent in terms of there being differentiation made between them. But I think the concern, of course, insofar as the internet is concerned, is really just making sure that people have equal access and opportunity. And as long as you can provide that, as long as people have a good valued service, I think that people will be willing to take on some of these other extras along the way.
Rick Gershon, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Gordon. It's been fun.
Rick Gershon is a professor of communication at Western Michigan University. He is also the co-director of the Telecommunications and Information Management Program. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.